Listen and stream the all-new talk radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
It's just about 10 minutes before 8. And we're getting, as I told you all earlier on, we do have a really interesting discussion this morning. The gentleman who's been here before. So we're going to put down the WhatsApp thing. I know all they want to talk about it and all the vex and all of that kind of thing. But we have plenty of time to talk about WhatsApp because they ain't going to fix WhatsApp anytime soon. So don't fool yourself. So we'll discuss that. Put it down for the meanwhile. And we welcome back to our program a gentleman who's been here before. And that is Dr. Don Samuel, civil engineer. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Satish. Good morning to all your loyal listeners. Good morning, Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah, the traffic hit you hard this morning.
It did very well hit me hard.
And I guess it's for all the other commuters as well. Some days you just can't tell. Some days it's easy breezy. You come into Port of Spain, you have no problems. Other days you just really had to ask yourself what's going on and what causes the problems. But we're not here to talk about that per se. Our discussion, self-help versus no help. TNT communities paving their own roads. We saw that making the front pages recently. A businessman, Clint Arjun, out in Faizabad, engaging in a huge project to repair some roads, but it's been taking place across the country. You've been seeing citizens frustrated, obviously. Yeah. They've been appealing for help. Nobody listening to them, apparently. They ain't getting the results. Going with the bucket and the whatever else and fixing the road as best as they could. There is an association, a taxi drivers association in Aranjuez. They've been doing a lot of that. And now up comes the Minister of Works and Transport and say, hey, watch me, let me tell you something. Well, they really shouldn't be doing it the way they're doing it, you know. Me, I no problem. All they want to do it, come and talk to us and let's see how it goes. Let's start with your opinion. As a civil engineer, there are many things one would have to consider in repairing a road. What's your take on the ministry's approach and citizens themselves rising to the occasion?
Yes, Atish, this is quite a chicken and egg situation. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're quite right. On one hand, it appears that the repairs to the road not coming fast enough. So, of course, citizens are rightfully frustrated. They need to use the roads. They're worried about the impact of the vehicles, the maintenance costs. So they take matters into their own hand. And then when they do, the ministry then says, here's what, but you need to consult with us. Now, what does that consultation look like? Is it that you have to wait for an approval? How long is the approval going to take? And in the meantime, citizens are getting more and more frustrated. So as a civil engineer, I look at the whole issue objectively, and there are pros and cons. On one hand, I do understand, I'm a driver myself. I live in an area where there's a road, it's called Factory Road in Chogona. So it's a lot of potholes.
There was actually a robbery in Factory
Road. There was, yes. Yesterday, mm-hmm. Quite right. And Factory Road is riddled with potholes. And it's like a dodge one, you get into another one. So I totally share that frustration. But on the other hand, then there's the quality control. So if citizens are repairing roads at their own cost, we need to talk about what kind of materials you're using. Now, some are using concrete. There has been a debate on concrete versus asphalt, and we spoke about that a mm-hmm. couple of shows ago. But then there's the quality control, the durability, how long it's going to last. Now, it is a very much a quick fix. What I saw, the pictures in the papers with the Taxi Drivers Association and as well as the businessman in South. It is very much a quick fix for the durability. But you see, I want to ask a question in a direct way, which is, there was so much allocations in the budget for fixing roads, so many promises made. Why is the work not getting done so quickly? And why are citizens now forced to fix their own roads? So as an engineer, I understand the problem. I empathize with these citizens. I am one. But at the same time, where's the accountability? Why are we not getting the roads fixed as promised?
I wonder whether people consider this to be a disclaimer or not.
Sure.
We ain't telling you're going to fix your road, eh?
Right.
So we don't want nobody, if the minister or whatever, go and say, well, Satish and this man was saying on the road, go on. No, that's not what we're advocating here.
No.
We are looking at the pros and cons of getting it done, the frustrations that would prompt people to do this, and you're asking a very relevant question. We were told recently that there's $200 million allocated on top of everything else that was allocated.
Yeah.
And we were told as well that not too long ago, we got a $1.something billion loan for repairing roads. And you have to ask the question, where is all of this money going? Is it just gun talk? is it politically correct dialogue to say, well, all right, we're doing this, we're doing that, we're doing next, we're allocating this, we're allocating the next. But it doesn't seem as though we're seeing the results. There are some pretty interesting statistics that you sent.
Yeah.
And one of those relates to who's responsible for which road.
Correct.
We hear that not during the election campaign, not when they walk in the streets and they're asking you to vote for them for local and general. We hear that after. When people start to hold these people to account and say, well, hey, you tell me you're going to fix this road, what's going on? Then we hear the excuse, well, that's a works and transport road. That's a we have orphan roads now where nobody responsible for them.
Correct.
And then we have agriculture road and this road. And it's apparently everybody else's road except the people who tell you they were going to fix it. Coming pretty close to the news, and I know that we are going to have to break for the news and that's going to interrupt our discussion, but there are some issues we need to deal with in people fixing their own road.
Yeah.
One of them is the legalities involved. Can people find themselves running afoul of the law if they try to fix a road?
Well, the Highway Act, Section 18, they do speak on that issue, that any repairs to roads classified as highways, because some are classified as highways, well, and some are classified as secondary roads, that they must obtain permission from the minister. So the ministry is right that they need to obtain the permission. Now, the legalities, of course, I'm not a lawyer, but I mean, just analyzing the situation. If one were to fix the road on their own and there is an accident afterwards or something, the road degraded, whose liability is it now? Is it the ministry or is it the person who took it upon themselves to fix the road? So while the citizens are doing a very good thing, and again, we're not advocating, they're taking matters into their hand, the issue of liability comes up. Who is responsible? Would the ministry say that, hey, you fix the road and, you know, you're responsible? Or would they take responsibility?
But it's a real catch-22 situation.
Yes, we are.
It?
Yeah, because very much so.
There was one point in time where, and I'm using a different activity, one point in time where if the grass too big in your drain in front of your house, you come outside with your hoe, your brushing cartilage, or whatever, you clean the thing and you deal with it. Now we've come to a situation where that regional corporation or I CPEP or I this one, we ain't touching that again for whatever reason. And the road situation has gotten so bad that it's costing people money.
Yes.
Because when you have to be traversing these bad roads all the time, your ends, your shock, your this, your that, the next. Sorry. And car parts are expensive. So people have come together and they've said, well, nobody doing it for us. Let's do it for ourselves. And they've started fixing these roads or repairing or patching or whatever you want to call them. But as you are highlighting, it's a real problem. One of the things I want us to deal with after we come from the news is the sharing up of the roads. Who's actually responsible for what? And I think that's going to give people a clearer idea of who they should be going to. Because some of these statistics, and I mentioned it yesterday about the percentage of roads that falls under the Ministry of Works as opposed to falling under local government, it's a huge disparity. And quite frankly, I was shocked.
Yeah.
When I saw the information as to how many roads local government is responsible for as opposed to the Ministry of Works and Transport. Then you have agricultural access roads and all of these other things. But as I said, news is upon us. We will be discussing that and so much more. And for those of you, this is for everybody. You're driving on the road bad, and you want some more information. This discussion is definitely up your alley with us. Civil engineer Dr. Don Samuel, stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
3 minutes after 8, into the final hour of our show here this morning. We continue our discussion, self-help versus no help. TNT communities paving their own roads. Our special guest, Dr. Don Samuel, civil engineer. Before we went to the news, I was asking for some clarity. Because I think there continues to be confusion in the minds of citizens as to who should they go to, which roads fall under who, and how do you know? Tell us about some of the information, who looks after which road, and how is it shared up?
Well, the first thing we need to know is that this information is available in the public domain.
Mm.
Anybody, any citizen can go to the websites of these ministries and discover the information that I'm going to talk about. So there is approximately 9,500 kilometers of roads in this country. And the Ministry of Works, on their own website, is responsible for about 2,000 or so kilometers, which is about 21%.
Mm-hmm.
Ministry of Agriculture is responsible for 1,200 kilometers, about 13%. And the Ministry of Rural and Development and Local Government is responsible for about 6,342 kilometers, or 66%. Of course, we know the 14 municipal corporations fall under this ministry. The question, the thing that you don't see on the websites is what roads exactly. So I have tried to research what roads fall under where. For example, if I were to ask where does the Southern Main Road fall under a popularly used road, I can't determine whether it's under the ministry or the regional corporation. I suspect it's under the ministry, but I don't know for sure. So this is one of the things I've been advocating for in the last year. You need to, the minister of the various ministries need to publish a list of roads which fall under their purview and tell us what is being done on those roads at the point in time. And in terms of what contracts have been awarded, what is the progress of those contracts, and what contracts are to be awarded. Consider that we are in the middle now of the dry season. We just have about 3 or 4 odd months, if so much, to deal with roadworks again, because roadworks is essentially a dry season thing. What's going to happen when the wet season comes upon us and our ability to repair the roads are now inhibited?
Well, I know that concern is heightened when you speak about Manson and Lamayaro.
Of course.
Of what's going on. I mean, just recently we saw the devastation and we saw this. I don't know if I use piecemeal approach, some people might get angry, but that's basically what it was.
Yeah.
A stopgap effort to try and restore some connectivity. And kudos to the ministry for trying.
Yeah.
We were told they spent $14 million to fix this thing, and apparently it's deplorable at this point in time. People concerned about what's going to happen when the rains come. What's your evaluation of the thing?
You know, my take on it is that the information at hand, which was distributed to the media, $14 million was spent. We know it's a temporary road, but there was no details with respect to what was the scoop. And you see, this is one of the other things I've been advocating for. What exactly did we do on that road? Did we put, it seemed like they put what we call crusher on, and we compacted. The issue with the, because I'm now reading that there are potholes on the road, on this temporary road. And you know, I've been talking to my colleagues in the industry, one of my good colleagues, Mr. Adesh Surajnath, sorry, from Trindoplan. We were talking about what might have been most likely cause, and it could have been degradation. In engineering, we call it gradation, where the materials need to bind properly, the size and materials, and so on. These are tests done to do those kind of things. And if that wasn't done, then you're going to get potholes in that temporary road. But there's also calculations that engineers do. We do it all the time. It's using the ASHTO method, and it's a structural number calculation to determine how long that road will last, even for a temporary or permanent road. So when I hear yesterday also the minister saying that trucks and speeding are the causes of the potholes. Well, I couldn't understand that, because what engineers do to determine the thicknesses of the layers on any road, permanent or temporary, we use the equivalent standard axle load of a truck. Trucks are what we use, the weight, there are factors and so on. I won't get into the detail engineering, but we use trucks as the design criteria. So I would have thought that if they had spend $14 million on a road, that the engineers in the ministry would have said, okay, let's do a calculation. Let's ensure that this is designed on a temporary basis for trucks, because a lot of trucks are going to use that road to get to Miaro and back. I remember that's part of our energy sector as well. And now I'm hearing that the minister is saying, well, trucks are the cause. I don't share that view. I think we need to do better. And I honestly think that for taxpayers to spend $14 million on a road and now it's riddled potholes, it puts us back where we are right now with the permanent roads.
Mm. Some time ago, I saw something coming out of Jamaica where there is some sort of device that is used to measure road density or something along those lines when they're constructing to know whether or not it meets these specifications.
Correct.
And I had to ask the question, well, I never see a picture one out here. Do we have those things
we
here?
We do.
Do we use them?
Well, this is what we're going to get to now. You know, as a young engineer, many years ago when I was knowing starting off. It's called a nuclear gauge.
Right.
So several consultants have it, the geotechnical consultants. We have about 5 or 6 geotechnical consultants in the country. Very good. They do their job very professionally. And they have the gauge. I used to see that many years ago, that when a road is paved, they would put the gauge on. It checks the density. And because the compaction is what we want to check. We want to get the optimum compaction for the type of moisture in the road. So all those things are engineering criteria. I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing it now. Or maybe it is used and maybe I'm not observing because I'm not there all the time. Another thing I'm not seeing is levels. So there's a reason why when you're traversing down the highway and there's this waviness.
Right.
And the purpose of taking levels is to ensure that you have an acceptable driving experience, a comfortable driving experience. Now, again, I'm not there 24/7, and maybe the ministry might knock me for saying this, but I am not seeing it on road projects, especially those that I would suspect they would be on those are major highway projects.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that they would. I would hope that they use it there, but what I'm not seeing it on is those quick fixes, those quick pavings that they do in the secondary roads, only minor roads. I'm not seeing it, but we should have it. It's a quality control.
It's probably the way we do business in this country, in that we don't try to get the real information, because we were told that the project should have cost $12 million. Last time we here went up to 14, not $2 million extra, because they were, yeah, all right, you know, we needed it, we didn't, we cater for this, that, whatever else. But less than how many ever months later, we are being told that the $14 million we spent is not going to serve us the way we expected it to. And that speaks to value for money. It speaks to whether or not we got the kind of work we should have gotten for that money. But we don't care about those things. As a citizenry, because PNN supporters go and get up and say, well, what do people do? The thing we needed, this, that, or they're ungrateful, or they're unpatriotic. And then you're going to have the other side saying, well, what about value for money? Who do this thing? Did they do a good job? Roads in this country are deplorable. And that's undeniable, regardless of which side of the political fence you sit. And one cannot help but ask the question about the quality of work that's being done.
Correct.
And as an engineer, I'm sure that you would have some kind of insight in this thing. Is the citizenry being given a 6 for a 9? When works are done, who is monitoring the contractors to make sure they do the right job? And I've raised this before. They paved Daisy Road some time ago. And at the bottom of Daisy Road, 2 days after they done paved the thing, the pitch started to move. And it became a real problem. And now, I think it's Buen Intento, where you call that place after the Wasa station when you drive across. Well, that place was bad. So they paved it, all well and good. But the thing done start to deteriorate already.
Correct.
Who's looking into, or let me not ask you who's looking into it. You might not be able to tell me that, but how should we be monitoring this thing?
Right. I can speak on that. Now, this issue of quality assurance, quality control, let's go back a step and let's use the Manzanilla Road as part of my discussion. We have established a temporary road in Manzanilla.
Mm-hmm.
The question now is the future design of the road, the permanent design, going to incorporate that temporary measure, or are we going to rip up that material, the $14 million we have spent, cast it aside, and then put on something new? That's a decision, engineering decision. I would think that if they put that temporary, what we call capping material, that is what we call an engineer, capping material, capping layer, that they will incorporate it. But those are questions to ask. Now, with respect to quality, there are three players always in the construction game. There's the contractor, there's the engineer, and there's the client. And those three players, they are part of the contracts that we use. The first thing that has to happen is the design has to be robust. So the design engineer would do a series of tests and investigations, geotechnical investigations, establish the criteria, and then they will design. What needs to be done is that we need to have a design review. When I was, there was one time when I was working for Trinto Plan Consultants, and that's what we did. We would do designs, others would review it. And also we would review other designs. And the purpose of that is to ensure that the design was robust. I don't know if that is happening again, where the design reviews are taking place. So that's one. Once the design is completed, the contract must be robust. So the contract has to be formulated with the correct specifications, criteria, penalties for poor performance, enforceable penalties, and we could speak on that after. And then it has to be a fair contract. It can't be advantageous to the contractor or advantageous to the client. And in this country, most of those contracts are a bit advantageous to the client. Okay. Once the contract is awarded and we execute, there must be monitoring. And therefore, payment certificates, which we use to pay the contractor different intervals for work done, must not be signed off until the tests are completed. There are other tests to do, a myriad of tests. You have material testing, and you have construction quality testing. And once those are completed and signed off, then the contractor gets paid. And of course, there's the defects liability period. So if the contractor does the work and it is not up to scratch, the contractor has to repair it at his cost. So I know that the social media commentary will say, okay, blame the contractor, but we really need to do root investigation as who is to blame. As I've said on previous programs, for the poor performance to take place, it means somebody or somebody's turning a blind eye. It can't be just one person. It can't be just the contractor doing, for want of a better word, crap. And then the client saying, okay, contractor, you're doing crap. And just
stop.
Mm-hmm. Right? In other words, I mean, people who know me well in industry, they will know that when it comes to contractors, I am very collegial with them. But when it comes to what we call bad work, I will say to them, hey, no. I'm not paying your cent until you get this right, because this is what we're paying for. And in the same breath, that is what taxpayers are paying for. They're paying for quality. So you're right. There's another road by Charleville there going on the highway that was paved a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the asphalt is, the asphalt layer is moving. But you know what nobody has taken into account is that we are importing bitumen. And I've asked this publicly. Of course, I haven't seen an answer. Who is doing the quality control on the bitumen we have imported? Now, we used to do it when we produced bitumen here for Petrotrin, right? Mm-hmm. But the bitumen we are importing now, Where is the quality testing on that? I mean, if there is, I'll be happy to see it. So all these things contribute to what we are seeing. Also, I am calling on the engineering associations. I have not seen them advocate in the public for this. I've seen the contractors association. My good colleague Glenn Marbison, he advocates from time to time, but I'm not seeing the engineering association saying, "Here's what, we are not accepting this." Now, they did make one. To be fair to them, they did make one public utterance when the road collapsed in going to Point Fortin there, that stretch of road. Fine. But what they need to know, they need to keep the heat going, because these are the public, or the civil society institutions that the public expects to advocate for them. I mean, I'm advocating here as a lone star, but they need to have other people advocating to hold the government accountable. And just for the purpose of politics, any government, not just this one. So whatever future government, we need to hold them accountable, because that is how we will get it done.
Where are we getting bitumen from?
Contractors, they said they imported it from, someone was saying from Jamaica and so on. But the last announcement from the minister is that I think they were Trinidad Lake Asphalt. They are importing bitumen and the contractors are purchasing from them. So I'm not sure where they're importing from, but importing is one issue, and there's a cost factor there, because whereas we used to produce it in country, I expect the rate of the price of road construction to go up now because we're importing.
Well, I had in 2019, I had spoken to a huge contractor, and he had raised this issue back then.
Yeah,
about the availability of bitumen and how much it's costing and how it's impacting on roads and all of that. 2023, so many years later, we're having the same discussion, and we had spoken sometime to former Finance Minister Karen Nunes to share. She had brought up the same thing as well.
Yeah.
About what impact is that having on the quality of roads that we're doing. Unfortunately, we don't seem to be getting the kind of answers that you're looking for and that we as a population deserve.
No, we do. And there's another issue. And I just want to dovetail into, because I was listening to the program coming in the traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked about the quarries. There is an analysis has to be made of whether we have enough of the other types of materials needed for road construction. What we call the crusher run or blue limestone or the sub-base materials. And if quarries are not being managed properly, right? And I'm not saying that they are or they're not, but if they're not being managed and we don't have that data, how can we then take on future road projects? So the whole construction industry actually depends on satellite industries And so all this analysis has to be made. And all I'm seeing on the in the media from various arms of the government is that, here's what, let's blame the truckers. Let's blame the speeding drivers. Let's blame everybody, but let's not try to find the root cause of the issue. And that is what we need to do. And until we don't find the root cause of the issue, we will be in this situation for years to come.
Well, this is just, we're talking about it, bitumen. Yeah. What is bitumen? How is it bitumen manufactured? Because somebody sent a question here asking, well, we have a pitch lake here, why are we importing bitumen?
Yes, that is one of the questions I've had to answer. So I'll tell you this. Now, the pitch lake does produce some bitumen, and what the Trinidad League Asphalt used to do with that was produce bituminous products. For example, you'll notice there's a coating that, or a tar that they put on the road before they pave. Mm. It's called a prime coat or a tack coat in that case. And then they also produce other types of products. The bitumen that was produced in this country was actually produced from petrochin, okay? What they call industry refined bitumen. That was used by contractors, and when you bind it with the various aggregates, you get asphalt. And then, you pave, right? So the issue here, it really sounds like a bit of an irony that we have the largest natural deposit for want of the loose wood pitch in the world, and we are importing bitumen. And I think that is causing some level of embarrassment because it's just ironic. It's very ironic. So the thing that occurs is that the pitch lake doesn't produce enough bitumen for road construction or for the types of projects. So now we have to import. And that is what petrochin was for, among other things. So this is the challenge we find ourselves now. So the bitumen is one thing, but the quality of, what do you call it, quality assurance or the quality control is something that we need to hammer down.
Mm.
The other thing is that who is doing the paving? Now, we've seen contractors call themselves contractors, some of them, not all of them. We know the experienced road paving contractors in the country. I don't need to call names. We all know who they are. But there are small to medium contractors who call themselves contractors, and they don't want to grow properly. So they don't want to learn the business and then grow themselves. So you'd find if they don't hire the right types of people to manage construction, the experienced, qualified people, you're not going to have a proper road paving or rehabilitation project.
There was this drive to hire 200 small contractors to assist with road paving.
Right.
And when that was first announced, people saw it as a great thing.
It is.
Because you're allowing people to get into the industry.
Correct.
To build a business, to assist with a problem that we've been having for a long period of time. But has it worked that way? The reason why I'm asking is this. This is probably, I don't know if you have any other issues in the world, but this is probably one where a pothole can turn into a speed bump when it is repaired.
Yes.
And I don't know if that's normal across the world, but it shows that there's not enough expertise going into repairing the pothole. Because what you have is you have some fellas with this tar thing, and then they have the material in a truck, and if they pull up by a hole, drop two cones to traffic, and then they throw the material, they compact it fast, and they move on.
Correct.
But is it being done properly?
No, right? So it's a very simple procedure, and I always tell people you don't have to be an engineer to understand. Engineering is common sense. So this is how you repair a pothole. First things first, you need to figure out what caused the pothole. It could have been poor drainage, could have been failure of the subgrade, as we say, which is the layer below the road. So if you're going to fill the pothole and you haven't analyzed the root cause, the pothole is going to happen again. Assuming that you fix the drainage and you fix the subgrade, you need to take a broom. This is a simple thing. Sweep out the pothole. And that simple thing I just said there is not done.
Not happening.
And you throw the material, and I'm using loose language, throw the material in the hole, and what happens? There's no binding. So you need to clean the hole, sweep it out, and then you need to take a asphalt saw and cut the edges around the hole so that you have a good bind of the existing to the new. Once you do that, then you put the prime coat, or the tack coat as the case might be. And there's a certain time for that to penetrate into the subgrade so that it binds the new layer to the old layer. Then, as you say, you throw the asphalt in, but then there must be compaction. So there's different types of compaction, and you can't always use mechanical compaction in some cases because that might, what we call in engineering, segregate the material. So you might use a hand tamper and so on. And then, of course, when you finish that, you check and make sure everything is okay. But the problem is some areas in Trinidad cannot be repaired by simply filling the potholes. If there are so many potholes between, let's say, over a course of 20 meters, you need to, as we all know, mill the road,
mm-hmm.
see what is going on with the upgrade, see if the water is getting in, see what is the failure mode of the road, and then install a brand new structure, pavement structure on the road.
We need to take a couple messages, but sure. when we get back, we continue our discussion. We take some of your calls on 627-3223-625-2257. Our special guest, civil engineer Dr. Don Samuel. Our topic, self-help versus no help. TNT communities paving their own roads. Stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
27 minutes after 8, our special guest this morning, civil engineer Dr. Don Samuel. The topic, self-help versus no help. TNT communities paving their own roads. Let's take some of your calls. 627-3223-625-2257. Hello, good morning.
Morning, Satish. I'm going to tell you. According to your argument, there's some about nobody know who wrote and who wrote it is and what road it is. So the Ministry of Works can't put up sign from the end of them road to the end of their or to the end of the next road, right? And everybody going to know that the Ministry of Works road. Everybody going to know the agriculture road. Everybody going to know which is the southern main road who it belongs to and who it belongs. Because I have a problem when politicians coming by your house, they'll be crossing in everybody's road. And they'll come and tell you all kind of things, we go fix that and we go fix it. But the road will belong to them and they reach there. So tell the Ministry of Works or whoever, or make put marking down. And when politicians come in to ask for vote, don't go on them side. Stay on your side. Later back.
Is it really that simple? Because somebody sent another message saying, well, why we don't call a code the road sign, such as basically what he's suggesting.
Yeah.
Is it that easy?
Well, I couldn't agree with Colin more. I think he's quite right. I always say engineering is common sense, and that is a common sense approach. I think the regional corporations do color code their signs. And I guess you could tell from those color coding which roads belong where.
Mm-hmm.
But I think more needs to be done. And as the citizenry, we should respectfully demand that the list of roads are published and what is being done and what is the forecast going forward.
Okay, try us back. I'm sorry about that. 627-3223-625-2257. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Happy.
Good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning, good morning.
One thing, I have noticed. In terms of when you have no instructions, in terms of how they are
taking operation. Okay, I'm going to have to ask you to call us back because we can't understand what you're saying. Your call dropping a bit, and it's going to be unfair to you and to the listeners to allow you to continue. We just really can't understand what you're saying. Sorry about that. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Satish.
Morning,
Trinidad. Good morning to the goodly gentleman.
Good morning, good morning.
Morales here, New Grand. What you just said there, I was going to call it, but you said it already. Why we don't have a list of the roads, a forecast on what is to be done, and see if it's relevant, really, to have Ministry of Work, contractors, and the corporation. I don't know, maybe they could put the rules on that one. Something needs to be done. Because at the end of the day, we the road using public suffers. I mean, not every pothole like a duck. You know? Look, I put on 3 shockheads in my car within the last 6 months. 3. And I the fourth one, 3 gone, mash up, plus tire. I mean, and not always like a duck or pothole. Sometimes you just see a man coming across the road on you sometime, and when you do so, that pothole, he's trying to duck. So at the end of the day, that listing needs to be done. But who will do it by? Who willing to do it? Is it as it is benefiting some bigger being or some bigger body behind the scene? Because it's so basic. List of the roads, according to your forecast, what is to be done. And if our system was working in years ago, I don't think that system could be relevant to 2020. You know, with the increased traffic on the roads, because our vehicle usage on the roads have almost nearly about 500 times base. Maybe increased by what happened, but by usage we had maybe even 20 years ago. The last 10 years, the usage of your double the vehicles number and your usage double. Lockdown listing, so with the doubling, of course, you will have greater rent here. Lockdown listing, bye.
Okay, thank you so much for your call. Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning to you, sir. How are you going? Long time, I hear you, man.
Hi there. Well, you see, you just raised my body. Because when you're speaking about roads in Karani, You much time look yesterday, I had an accident yesterday about 1 o'clock. And I don't know if it's fatal or what, but it's the course of traffic jam and so on. So if it is followed, the guest by you there in power, please get this road fixed for us because it's a bypass road from the highway to La Paz and taking you to Arimas and Sandy Grande. And very, very bad, and I hope the ministry listening to what it is like. And another thing I want to suggest to them, it have he road, she road, them road. Isn't that right? If you have, if you got the money, you say your demarcation, the point of regards to, what you call the county council, you tell them, listen to me, this is your boundary. This is your demarcation point. And let them be in charge of it, because the Ministry of Works is hiding too long behind what you call road repairs, and the people are to pay the suffering when repairs for motor cars and for trucks and so on. I thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Lapa. Always nice to hear from you. He's speaking about that road in front of the cremation site. A huge hole there. I almost went into the thing.
Yeah.
And but there's a discussion that we always have in that when we come about and ask, well, why aren't these roads being repaired? Ministry could tell you, well, you know, regional corporation is supposed to deal with that. And the regional corporations say, well, you ain't giving me the money. How can we fix the roads if we don't get the money? But we hear about all these massive allocations being made, and now the discussion has morphed into the world itself. When property tax come, you'll get more money to fix the thing. As somebody who's involved in the industry and so on, what's really going on? Is the money allocated? People hiding the money? They're thiefing it out? They're not getting it? What's the reality?
Well, first, I'm going to comment on that. I want to just thank you, callers, because you see, I always say the people have the solution, eh? So your two callers have the solution, right? And a simple solution. But let me get into the question now. Allocation. Now, in the last budget, I did a mini analysis. And $136 million was assigned to the Ministry of Rural Development and for road rehabilitation. They had $75 million allocated for pothole patching, $15 million for the rehabilitation of secondary roads, $80 million for landscape repairs, $80 for bridge construction, so we've seen some of that. And then $110 million for the major construction road rehabilitation. And that is outside of this $200 million that was allocated for the startup of the secondary roads company. And that's another question I need to ask. I cannot find a website on the secondary roads company. I know who the directors are. I don't know what they are doing, right? Because there's $200 million allocated there. So what exactly are they doing? They need to tell us. In terms of the potholes and the responsibility, again, it comes back to there must be a definitive list that says this is under you, this is under you. Now I am seeing that the Secondary Roads Company, which was under the Ministry of Rural Development and Local Government initially, it's now gone back to the Ministry of Works, and nobody could explain what informed that decision. So is it that we don't know what we're doing? Is it that we're not planning anything right? As a person in industry, I can tell you road construction is quite simple. The formula for doing road construction and road repairs has been there for over 1,000 years, okay? And we just use technology to improve the thing. You talked about a pothole turning into a hump. If you are coming on the Solomon Hutchoy Highway and you pass the Kearney Bird Sanctuary Bridge, as I say, right after there, if you attempt to get onto the shoulder, there's a piece of road that is a bump. If you hit that bump, I think your car will careen over the highway. It's dangerous, and that was an area that they fixed, and it's now a bump. It's right on the line where the road marking line is for the shoulder. And I'm saying to myself, has nobody seen this? Is nobody seeing that the roads all over the place are deteriorating? And you know, when it comes to the politics, it doesn't matter which side of the coin you're on. We all have to live in Trinidad and use the roads. So we need to repair the roads.
That speed bump in the middle of the highway.
Well,
it's heading north.
No, it's heading on the southbound. But not in the middle of the highway per se. It's on the edge. But if for some reason you are on traversing there, and maybe I'll take up a chance on the table.
There is one on the north as well.
There's one on the north, right?
There is, right after the bird sanctuary flyover.
Oh,
just before the
dip, right here.
Yeah, apparently they fixed a hole and that turned into a speed bump there. Let's take another call.
Sure.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning, Satish, and to your guest there.
Good morning, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I remember I talked to you about materials the last time you came here, boy. You know, the road is still there, Mr. Gentleman. I could carry a wall of you. I could carry the road going to Maracas and I could show you these roads. These are roads that have a lifespan. They 80 years ago they were built. And today, they're still standing up there. They have no sinkhole. They have no pothole. So what is the difference between that road that gives it a lifespan of 80 years and all roads, like, for example, on Wallafield, or not Wallafield, in Manzanera and Mosquito Creek, that just, you know, I understand that these roads are close to the sea and everything, but you, as a acceptable contractor, cannot take all of that into account and build a, you know, put things in place so that these things wouldn't happen. I am very concerned about the relationship between the ministry and the contractor. I find, you know, in Guyana, for example, they will make you dig up the road at your own expense. And they'll tell you, if you don't want to dig it up, there's no problem. But you will never get another contract from us. And we don't seem to do that. We dig up, we pave roads at the public expense, and WASA does come within less than 24 hours and dig up the road in front of you. And they walk away and leave it open like that. So I don't know what we need to start doing things a different way from how we do it. Not because what we're doing now is really wasting taxpayers' money. Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah, thank you so much for your call. This, as somebody who's involved in the industry, how difficult would it be for WASA to fix the thing after they mash it up?
Well, that has to come with planning. Now, several good points he raised here. So I'll touch on that. I'll touch on the question first, which is, it's not that difficult. If you are planning a contract and you engage WASA and you said, here's what, you must know all the applications for either new water lines or repairs on that particular road.
Mm.
Tell us what is your schedule, when you're going to do it, and do it, and then we will come in and pave after. Simple. And also, when they do the repairs, they must have some time allocated once the repairs are done to monitor to see whether the leak will leak again. To put it in a rotum.
Mm-hmm.
So once the leak doesn't leak again, then we come in and pave. But I don't know why is that so difficult. WASA does have a scheduling program. They have engineers. The ministry has engineers. It's very simple for them to come together and say, hey, well, this is what we need to do.
It's
common sense.
Apart from common sense, it's ridiculous that a country that has as many intelligent people as we do,
correct,
we've not been able to find a mechanism to fix it. And I have to ask the question whether or not it's deliberate that we have not found a solution. Because maybe somebody stands to benefit from a contract to pave this thing somewhere down the road after. I don't know. But it seems as though it can't be that difficult for WASA to set up a little section that has the expertise to properly fix a road. You just said it's not rocket science.
It's not.
You sweep out the holes, you see what's going on, you fix the thing the way it's supposed to be. And that should take place almost immediately after WASA does what they have to do. I remember, and the reason why I'm saying that, it probably you don't want to fix it. When I entered QRC, I remember, it just came to me. In Form 1, we had people from WASA come in and speak to us for something. I can't remember what it was. And I remember one of my classmates asking that question so many years ago.
Yeah.
To WASA officials, why it is when they paved the road, always come and dig it up and can't fix it. And he shut down the whole discussion, a first former, because it's common sense that if you're damaging the thing, you should be able to fix it. But maybe nobody cares for whatever reason, because as you're suggesting, it's not that difficult to get it done. We have some other messages here.
Yeah.
Let's see what people have to say. One is saying Lake Asphalt imports bitumen from Barbados. Bitumen is made from the heavy fuel oil from the refinery. We have an idle bitumen plant in Pointe Pier.
Agreed.
So why can't we get that up and running?
Good question.
I mean, this would fall under the Ministry of Energy.
It does.
So I think Stuart Chung should answer that question as to why are we importing bitumen when, well, number one, we always complain that people don't have jobs.
Right.
We always complain that we don't have the foreign exchange to spend. And then we have questions about the quality of the bitumen that we may or may not be importing. We could fix all of that by starting back this factory in this bitumen plant in Pointe Pier.
Correct.
Another one.
Yeah.
Why don't we line the roads with wood slabs before paving, as was done in first world countries? What's that about?
I'm not sure. That one new to me. I probably had to get some more context on that.
Another one. Is it necessary for these water lines to be run on the roadway?
Ah, that's a very good question, actually. In some countries, there's a reserve that is normally put for infrastructure, whether it's a gas line, water line, electricity, what have you. Of course, you don't put the electricity and water in one reserve, and we know why. That is a very good comment in that we could stop putting lines in the road, but it's not as simple as that, or cut and dry. You could run infrastructure parallel to the road, but there are some instances where they must cross the roadway to get into to houses and so on. So the thing is, what causes leaks? Now, WASA does have a standard for the minimum depth that the line must go. And the reason for that is because if you have a truck on the road and the truck displaces a particular load and you are not within that if you're within that minimum depth,
it damages
the pipe. Obviously. So it's common sense.
Right.
So that's why there's a... But sometimes lines are not laid down in that minimum depth. So I want to touch on something too that you asked me and also the caller raised, and maybe we haven't talked about this, but I'm just going to say it because it's a looming issue in terms of corruption and, bubble, as they say, and thing going on. Right now, if you go to the Office of the Procurement Regulator website, there is no regulator installed. They've removed his name. The regulator's contract came to an end sometime in January, and they have not installed a new regulator.
Really?
Go to the website. This is breaking.
I mean, we've not heard of that before.
I know. I checked the website myself just last week, and there's no regulator, and nobody's talking about it. And this, to me, we need a new regulator in this country because this is the whole issue around procurement. How are we going to hold errant engineers or errant contractors or even errant clients accountable if we cannot enforce the penalties through the procurement legislation, which is another issue? I mean, we have a president now, and I don't know if that'll be brought back on the table for the proclamation of the act. But right as at this point, there is no name assigned to the regulator when you go to the website.
That's real cause for concern.
It is.
I mean, there are people who have their questions about procurement regulation and whether or not we just, giving lip service to the thing in the way it's being done. And as I go back to Karen Nunes, the sheriff, she says the bill was emasculated and it makes no sense. It was watered down and all of those things.
Well, she is partially right. There was a section of the bill that was taken out where there are certain services that don't fall under the act. I don't know why, and some will health. And then there was a line that said that the minister has discretionary powers to either enforce the act or not enforce the act. That can't be discretionary. Procurement is everything. I mean, I have my own PhD in construction procurement, so of course I advocate for this all the time. But procurement is every single thing. It is why, as there's suspicion on corruption taking place in contracts, and we need to remove that suspicion. But I also need the industry to stand up for itself. I mean, I know the JCC does make statements to the government, but I don't see the government actually responding to the JCC, and that is not a good thing to have. The government must have a relationship with the construction industry. So and then some of the associations, as I said, they're not standing up. So why is that? Why is our independence reaching to this point? We need to stand up and hold them accountable.
Is there any way for the average citizen to, let's just say there's a project, and we are told after the project that it costs us so much money.
Right.
Is there a way for the average citizen who's concerned about whether or not we are being told the truth, whether this was overpriced, whether it's value for money, to find out that information?
Well, I guess he'll do it through the Freedom of Information Act, but I think it takes so long to get the information through that method. I mean, I don't know if the information would be sanitized by the time it is responded to. But there needs to be, it's as simple, I do it all the time. I manage projects, so I will have a little spreadsheet that says, here's what, this is what we spent. This is variations, if there were any. This is the justification for the variations. So this is why we actually spent more or less, okay? I have to justify it in my own job. I have to justify why money is spent because, I don't want to say what, but I am accountable to my bosses. So at the same time, it's the same thing that could happen with the country. There needs to be accountability from the ministries as to how all money is being spent.
Yeah, the reason why I asked that, some time ago, there was a major disruption to traffic along the Tasker Road.
Right.
Heading from Palm, the Tasker Road from Daisy Road to Princess Town. And that caused a lot of problems.
Right.
And it shut down for 2-3 weeks. I think it was a month or more, whatever else. To date, we've not been told how much it costs to fix that bridge. which is basically what it is.
Correct.
Is our bridge.
Well, cost is one, but scope is the other thing. Have we provided what they call a sustainable solution? Did we fix the problem as a plaster, or did we fix the problem as a surgery? And we need to stop plastering things and fix the problem as a surgery. Get into it, fix it.
I think that'd be, because some time ago we spoke to a group out of Jamaica.
Yeah.
And their whole mandate, a non-governmental organization, is holding office holders to account.
Correct.
And asking them for the information, what did you do in the last year, and the projects that you engaged in, see, you said it cost so much, and delving deep into it to find out whether or not those costs were right. I think we definitely need something like that in this country, if not for any other reason, but to see whether or not we're getting value for money.
Well, I'll give you a story. I'm a member of the Institutional Civil Engineers of the UK, right? So I was reading the story about 5 years ago, where the minister, well, let's say the equivalent minister of works,
right,
did some embezzlement. And the Institution of Civil Engineers, what they did is that they wrote to the minister publicly and said, you have been caught in embezzlement. And the Institution of Civil Engineers, which is similar to our engineering organizations here, do you know what they did? They expelled him from the institution. A certain minister in government, he embezzled a small amount of money, and they kicked him out of the institution. This was several years ago in the UK. So I'm not saying, and I know the minister may be listening, I'm not saying that we should expel the minister, but that is what accountability is. That is where the whole issue is.
Let's take a couple of quick messages, sure. And when we get back, we'll be taking your closing comments. 12 minutes before 9 on the Morning Rumble on Freedom 106.5 FM. Stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Probably where we should drop the curtains on our interview. It's been a pretty interesting one. Self-help versus no help. That's how some people feel in many parts of the country. You know, trying to fix this thing myself, I'll get myself in a whole set of problems. We delved deep into the matter. Pros, cons, what you should not do, who you should go to, who you shouldn't go to. Now let's wrap up by you giving some advice, because there may still be people who want to know what to do. If there's a hole in front of my house on the road and I'm mashing up my shocks every time I drum, should I fix the thing or not? Should we tell people what to do, or should we tell people, listen, find out from the representatives what they are doing first before you try to take matters into your own hands? What's the advice?
Well, I think that's a good approach. We shouldn't be telling people what to do. I mean, we live in a free democracy, as you say. And I think we should allow people to, if they feel so inclined, they want to fix the road, fine. But we should not make it a habit or a precedent where the ministry will say, okay, fine, people fixing the road, but we're not going to do anything. We're just going to allocate, and where's the money going? So I think, yes, they could consult their representatives, if they could find some of them, because some of them you can't find, find them and engage them and say, here's what are you all doing, and demand, and when I mean demand in a respectful way, and that is the advice going forward. But we need the government to do what they promised to do and repair the roads. Wow. So I don't know.
I'm telling you, there's election time coming, we go find all of them, that's for sure, because they could be on the campaign trail one way or the other.
That worries me as well, because in a pre-election phase, you would find that is where the quality may be very well compromised, because there's an acceleration, a hurriedness to fix the road. And we're not taking the tests and so on. So anyhow.
Thank you, Dr. Don Samuel.
Sure, no problem. Glad to be here.
But I'll tell you this, sir. I cannot wait to see what the election campaign is going to be for this local government election. The kind of thing I hear people saying, they call me and they tell me this, that, the next, and the other. I may not necessarily want to be one of those people canvassing this election for local government. We'll see how it goes. I'm sure that we'll have more discussions. Thank you once again. Carrie Vichy's here. She'll be guiding you guys all the way until 12 noon. 12 noon, Carrie? Yeah, 12 noon. As we always say, be safe on the nation's roads. You never can tell. The life you save may be just that of your own.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.